watch out coming. Gonna be a son of a gun. You're gonna make pretty women go and jump and shout. And the world gonna know what's it all about. Cause you know I'm here. Little girl, I know you know I'm here. You know I'm your hoochie-coochie man. Everybody knows that I'm here.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and that was Buddy Guy. And, you know, as we do our day in history, today is the birthday of Buddy Guy, born in 1936, 77 years old. Just cut his latest album, Rhythm and Blues, I think maybe one of his best works. If you can find a cut for that during the course, next 2 hours we'll be playing that. He played with all the greats from the very beginning on, and he's still cooking. So we want to wish him a happy birthday. This is also the birthday of Henry Ford, who was born in 1863. We've talked about him before in the air. He's been known as the man who really created a car in every home. He's also known for being a racist and anti-Semite. But he was born on this day in 1863, so we put that out there. The reality has to deal with history. If you're we're doing education today, the first hour, and so the first thing we learn about teaching history, which I did, which is that you have to teach reality, not just what they want us to know. This is also the birthday of Anita Hill, who, of course, was instrumental in the in the testimonies around Clarence Thomas's being named Supreme Court when she accused him of sexual harassment. This is the birthday of Lawrence Fishburne. This is also the day in 1970 when Louis Lomax died, who was one of the great American writers. And one of the things about Louis Lomax that we don't know, we know in history about Mike Wallace interviewing Malcolm X and doing this whole series on Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam in the early 60s. What people don't tell us all the time, this was Louis Lomax's idea. He produced it. He wrote it. He taught Mike Wallace everything he knew about the Nation of Islam. It was Louis Lomax's work, but the only person who gets credit for it these days is Mike Wallace. And Louis Lomax wrote a book in 1962 that I read as a very young man in high school that really made me think a lot, called The Negro Revolt, and he was one of our amazing writers. Another man learned a great deal from today, died on this day in 2006, is Murray Bookchin. He was a philosopher, an author, an anarchist. I studied with him for a year in Vermont many years back, and an amazing thinker about where our society should be going. This is also the day that two people died on the same day, two of our greatest filmmakers, Michelangelo Antonio and Ingmar Bergman, both died today in 2007 on the same day, much like President Adams and President Jefferson died on the same day, July the 4th. Many years before that. Now, very quickly go through some of this, what happened today in history. This is a time we forget that in the late part of the 15th century, 1488, Jews and Muslims were being murdered by Christians throughout southern Europe. This is a day when 16 Jews were burned alive at the stake in Barcelona. This is also the day in 1729. Does anybody know what happened today in 1729? Baltimore City was founded on this day. In 1729. This is also the day in 1839 that Joseph Cinqueas led the slave revolt that became the Amistad Revolt when slaves mutinied and took over the ship that was captured in Long Island on August 26th, about 3 weeks after the capture. This is also the day in 1863 when President Lincoln issued his Eye for an Eye order, warning the Confederacy that the Union would shoot a rebel prisoner for every black prisoner shot. That's important because up until that point, every black man who fought in the Civil War, who was captured by the South, was murdered when he was caught. He was pushed into doing this, but did it. There was also a day in 1866 when the Great Riot took place in New Orleans, and whites attacked the interracial Republican Party, killing 40 people, injuring over 150, and the beginning of the struggle over Reconstruction to take back the rights that people gained. This happened today in 1866. This is the day that Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was born, the great congressman from Harlem. This is also the day, and we'll leave it here, that Edward G. Walker, who is the son of abolitionist David Walker and Charles Mitchell, were elected to the Massachusetts House of Delegates. And why that's important, these were the first two African Americans ever to sit in the state legislature in an American state after the Civil War. And so that happened today in 1866. And now we turn to our conversations live on the air, bringing today's news to you. So you can join us here at 410-319-8888. As we look at the Maryland State Assessment test results and why they went flaming down in most localities in the state of Maryland, what that's about, didn't just happen in Maryland. It happened across the country. Chicago made headlines first. Other cities were making headlines around the country with test scores going down. It happened here. And that also leads to the whole question of Common Core and the debate over Common Core as the new curriculum that some people would argue is being instituted, but argue that we don't even know what it means yet or what is being instituted. So we're going to cover that with our guest this hour. Carl Roberts joins us in studio. Everyone's in studio. Carl Roberts is Executive Director of the Public School Superintendents Association of Maryland. Carl, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Betty Weller is back with us, President of the Maryland State Education Association. Betty, good to have you back as well. Sean Johnson is with us. He's an educator, former public school teacher, blogger, and co-host at Chalkface, co-organizer of the Occupy Department of Ed. And Sean, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
And it's been a long time, but she's back. Dr. Sonia Brooklyn Santelices is with us. She's Chief Academic Officer for Baltimore City Schools. Dr. Santelices, good to have you back in the studio as well.
Good to be back.
And you all can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. And let me turn the sound off my computer. I just heard it. Not good. Okay. Welcome. Good to have you all with us. Let's begin about the test results for a second, the MSA results. It really did plummet across the state. People like to look at Baltimore City and say your scores are plummeting, but it's not just Baltimore City. It's across the state of Maryland. And literally, it's been across the nation. The first headlines, as I said earlier, were in Chicago. And as Chief Academic Officer, let me start with you, Dr. Santelices. I mean, what do you think this says, not just for Baltimore City, but for the state and nation as a whole, why these test scores are plummeting all over the place?
So, to be frank, I don't want to speak for the entire nation, even though I do have colleagues in other
states.
But,
I mean, theoretically, how you analyze and look at this, you know, just not that you're officially speaking for any other system, but this one.
I do think what we're seeing is an attempt by school districts, by teachers, by principals to make a shift based on a direction that's set by the Common Core. And I do want to say that the Common Core are standards. They're not curriculum, but they are standards. And in an attempt to teach to new standards, what we find is, in some cases, a misalignment. And that's part of why we believe that there's been a consistent drop, that it's not just been in one place or the other. But I also want to emphasize that it should not mean that we are not still teaching, that we're still not addressing the gaps that we see, particularly here in Baltimore City. We are still keeping focused, but we have to acknowledge that when the assessment does not match what's being taught, you're going to see a misalignment, and it's going to show up in kids being taught. Tested on what they weren't taught.
Well, what was this for our listeners and especially parents and out there right now? And who wanna, I want you to join us at 410-319-8888. Betty Weller, what was the gap then between what was taught before and how it's being taught, and how the notion of core curriculum changed that? How would that affect the test? I think people are in a quandary about this.
Well, I think the standards are attempting to take students to a higher level, but I think right now the biggest part of the misalignment is because things are not necessarily being taught in the same order they were being taught in before. So a child who may previously have learned a concept in the sixth grade may now be tested on it in the fifth grade, and they haven't had it yet. So it's not a question that our kids are learning less. It's just that we have to align the curriculum now to meet the standards that are being expected at each grade level.
Sean?
I don't know. I have a different perspective. I don't buy into this idea that the Common Core is going to help students reach any new heights. I think there's a lot of hype surrounding these things, and I think it's just a whole fantastic waste of money and a misalignment of our priorities. You know, I taught in Maryland a decade ago, and since that time, I have seen elementary schools in this state eliminate recess, science, and social studies, pull kids out of art, music, and physical education in order to raise test scores. And this is what we have to show for ourselves. Testing is the status quo. And what we're finally starting to see is the absolute failure of test-based, standard-obsessed education within the United States. We've got school systems that are successful across the globe that are moving away from this, yet the United States is doubling down in a clear effort to ultimately privatize and make gobs and gobs of money off of these new standards and assessments. It's absolutely ridiculous, and it's a shame to see Maryland going in this direction.
Let me take the last several sentences out of your comment just for a moment, come back to the gobs and gobs of money and privatizing education, which is a vastly huge discussion to have, and just come back to what you all said and what you described as the problem with the direction of American education. And I think that's a good place for us to kind of jump off for a minute. I mean, are we moving in the wrong direction when we cut back recess, cut back on arts, cut back on some sciences, cut back on other subjects? And most teachers have said on this program before that they feel that they have to kind of push and test prep as opposed to push and really do real teaching. So I'm curious how you all would respond to Sean's comments. You can go ahead, Carl.
Well, Mark, I think actually we have come back around. I think the Common Core, as superintendents would agree, is going in the right direction. It's fewer concepts, but at a deeper level. I also think the school systems understand the importance of the arts, of physical activity. And I think you'll find, as you check across the state, that more time is being dedicated to science, to social studies, than maybe just 2 or 3 years ago.
That's not true.
Well, wait a minute. One more time. Let Carl finish here.
Well, I disagree. I think it is true because people understand the brain research that children learn in different ways, and the arts are critically important. I know my own grandchildren, for example, in elementary and middle school, are experiencing that, and they attend Maryland school systems with that. I need to say one thing, though, going back to a previous discussion, Mark. Superintendents 3 years ago predicted this drop in MSA scores. They said if we change to the standards and we start creating curriculum for the new standards, we're going to be assessing what is not taught, and the scores are going to go down, and we're putting teachers in a difficult position when we do that. Nobody would recognize that, meaning nobody in authority would, until just the last couple of weeks. And with that, and superintendents, it's a common sense. We believe in the change, we believe in the transition, but you have to do it the right way and in a common sense way with it. And we believe we're doing that, but we need to help people understand that transition.
I want to come back to what Sean was critiquing. I mean, is there a mania in this country towards testing that's ignoring successful school systems and what they do across the globe?
I think the mania is defined by people's reactions to the test scores. If a community, if a school district reacts to test scores as if that is the end-all to be-all, then yes, you will find mania. However, I think there are just as many examples, particularly in our school district, where we monitor, right? We monitor how many arts teachers, right, are in schools. Are schools cutting music? What's the amount of time that students spend in physical education? Because in an urban school district, the tendency could easily be to revert to test prep. And we know that that's not how kids learn. We know that kids need a full balance, right, of a variety of experiences to enrich their learning. And I do think that part of it is the responsibility of leaders to hold the line that it's the full picture. We have publicly discouraged boot camp test prep. And I've said it publicly, and there are a number of people who could cite that. I think that part of what we need to do is to begin to look at the complexity of where that might be occurring and stop kind of painting this broad picture that basically is not true and that is not characteristic of every school or every school district.
Well, I mean, I don't have any information on the facts in front of me, but before we open the phone to you, I mean, just anecdotally, I mean, you talk to teachers and principals in schools, Baltimore County, Baltimore City, that I've been talking to, for the most part, that many of the schools have cut out art and music or made them kind of an attachment. They're not like a main part of the curriculum.
Absolutely. What is not tested is not taught.
And then recesses, is cut down to almost nothing. I mean, kids have 20 minutes for lunch and they're back in the classroom without a break. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I think people are critiquing, that when we have an overall look at our education system, that's part of what's being taken away for some reason.
I mean, I've spent thousands of hours in elementary schools over the last several years, and there has been a rapid nationwide decline in the number of minutes devoted to social studies. I have seen educators in Maryland who rotate social studies, science, and health 20 minutes at the end of the school day. Why? Because it is not tested, so therefore it is not taught. I have seen second graders, veterans of 20, 30 years in the classroom have eliminated recess. These second graders do not have outdoor play because they want more academic time. So this is not anecdotal. This is me going to the classroom. Well, of course it's anecdotal. Me going to the classroom and having to watch this happen.
Dr. Sathesis.
And I think one of the things, and again, going back to the streamlining of the Common Core and how we are rewriting curriculum, right? And if you look at an elementary school, and I'll take the second grade example, one of the things that we have done, because we know we need more focus on science and social studies, is in the rewriting of the curriculum, we've embedded those content areas because we know that there has been kind of a rush, that there have been teachers and principals and even some central office staff who in the past have interpreted that to mean that we're only teaching math and reading. And so part of what we are doing with our new curriculum and again the Common Core has enabled us to do that because the standards are a much smaller set. There's not, you know, there's where there were 50 standards that a teacher might trying to cover in a particular given point in time, that's now been reduced to a smaller amount. And so what we've done is, for example, if you look at some of our new curriculum, a lot of them are based in science and social studies themes because we heard elementary school teachers when they said, you know, if most of my day is taken up in just reading and math, I don't get to the other subjects. And so what we've tried to do is work with teachers to be more creative in how to integrate those topic areas. I don't disagree that in situations where there are high levels of accountability for student achievement, we are not going to shy away from where students are achieving. I still owe parents in Baltimore City, I owe them that when their children come to school, they are able to read. I owe them that their children are able to be proficient in mathematics. And that is our job, to make sure that happens. I think the question is how educators understand and are we equipping teachers and are we equipping principals to understand the connection that providing students with those other experiences actually does impact whether they can read and whether they're proficient in mathematics.
I think real quick, it's important to mention that there is a lot of hoopla around the Common Core, and I've read the standards extensively. They're rather benign. There's not much new within these standards, but the problem is that Maryland and other states are going to double down on this accountability nonsense that we've known since No Child Left Behind is not working, especially in high needs environments. We're going to have the park. We're going to have numerous extra additional benchmarks, short cycle assessments. We're going to have teachers whose evaluations are going to be 50% based on test scores. Absolutely ridiculous. When we say, oh, there's going to be qualitative measures, we're going to rely on observations, we know full well that that is a 50-plus position, that test scores will outweigh and trump all of the qualitative evaluations 100% of the time.
Betty?
Well, I have to disagree with that because according to the state law, 50% of the teacher's evaluation now is going to be based on student growth measures. But there is nothing in the law that says it has to be a test. The test is not mentioned in the law. And right now we're looking at using only 20% of a teacher's evaluation as a test measure. But you know, that could change. This is sort of one of those things where we're building this plane while we're flying it. We're still looking for the right way to do it all. We are trying to balance arts and PE and recess and all of those things and still teach students what they need to keep up in the world. The standards are internationally benchmarked. So according to what I've been told, if our students are meeting those standards, they ought to be able to go anywhere in the world and stand up next to the best of them. I do think that we need to think about putting an emphasis on good teachers. I think that if you look at some of the countries where they don't do a lot of testing, they also spend a lot of time, energy, and money on attracting and retaining the best possible teachers. And since teachers are a huge part of what makes a difference in a child's learning, that is an area that we need to continue to look at.
Let me open the phones here. Folks calling in, join this conversation about the MSA tests, about the coming core curriculum, what they mean for our schools, where the controversy lives, why we're talking about it so much. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. And Morna, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Mark. I'd like to comment on the Common Core, and I have to say that I agree with what Dr. Sean Johnson has said, that the Common Core is essentially a Trojan horse that is going to bring in a degree of accountability and testing and corporate interest in our schools, which we are ignoring. For example, the National Governors Association, the Chief Council of State School Officers, and the Chief, all of whom designed the Common Core, did not get any or very little input from classroom teachers themselves in designing it. And yet the corporate involvement in funding this came from Lumina, State Farm, the Walton Foundation, the Eli Broad Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all of whom have a lot of connections with the American Legislative Exchange Association, otherwise known as ALEC. And they have a tremendous interest in seeing the Common Core go forward, as does Pearson, which spent millions of dollars lobbying for these new educational policies for accountability and testing to go through, because Pearson will be managing the park, among other things, with the Common Core. So you have these corporations that have billions of dollars of interest in seeing this happen, and yet nobody really knows if the Common Core standards are better or not. There may be a few standards that are better, but to me that's like admiring the handiwork of the carpenter who built the Trojan horse and not looking at what it's really going to mean for Maryland.
Anybody want to respond?
Well, I think we'll find out.
Carl?
Thank you. I think we'll find out the direction that the Common Core are going to take us. This is the initial transition phase, and I believe teachers and other education leaders are going to have a lot to say as they implement the new content in the curricula regarding what is reasonable, what is focused, and what are going to help individual young men and young women grow and be competitive. So,
But I don't know how we can say that when we know that poverty is a huge factor in student learning, student achievement, student success. We're going to spend millions of dollars giving them all iPads so that they can upload all of their private data along with their testing information to Pearson and the Gates Foundation and in Bloom, and yet we're doing nothing to take those millions of dollars to provide clean drinking water and air conditioning and all these other things that we know make a difference. Class size makes a difference.
Well, I appreciate the call. And Betty, you look here, we're about to jump in, then we'll go to Sean. Actually, we have 90 seconds. Why don't you take us to break?
Okay. Well, I think, you know, part of what's coming along with the Common Core is there's a whole different teaching pedagogy, and I think that's going to make a difference because teachers are going to be not just teaching students information and having them regurgitate it back, but they're going to be asking students to think more critically and problem solve more. And Mark, you and I were talking before the show. I think those are tools that once you give students those tools, they can take those tools and use them anywhere, not just in a classroom. They're life skills. So I think a lot of teachers are excited about the possibility of doing that. I think they're excited about delving deeper into the information and having students understand it. And I'm excited to see what direction we're going to go. I'm hoping it's going to be the right direction for us. And I'm hoping we have the flexibility to make small adjustments as we go along if it's not.
We're going to take a very brief break. Come back to our guests and our calls. We have Brian and Alan coming up, next two callers. And we have a Facebook comment from a kindergarten teacher. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she gone.
I got the blues. That's the name of that song. This is the birthday of Buddy Guy. And so we're going to be playing a little Buddy Guy all day long. One of my favorites, and this is one of my favorite songs, actually. So I'm glad that Mark Henry picked that one out. How did he know? He did. So welcome back. We're talking about education, talking about the core curriculum, talking about testing, the role of testing, the role of this core curriculum, where our education system is going. Carl Roberts is in the studio, executive director of the Public School Superintendents Association, Betty Weller, president of the Maryland State Education Association, Sean Johnson, educator, former public school teacher, blogger and co-host at The Chalk Face, a co-organizer of Occupy the Department of Ed, and Dr. Sonia Brookins-Santelices, who is chief academic officer for Baltimore City Public Schools, and you at 410-319-8888. Now, I know we went to break. Betty had just finished commenting. Sean, you were about to say something, and then we'll go back to the phones.
I was just going to say real quick that I think one of the huge problems with this, it's incredibly irresponsible to be building a plane while we're flying it. I think that's a terrible analogy because we have students who, this is their only year to be in third grade, only year to be in fourth grade, only year to be in fifth grade. They only get one shot at this. And if we're going to spend millions of dollars building a plane while we're flying it, then I have to even question why we're doing that to begin with.
Well, if you take the analogy away, though, I understand we can play with analogies, but... So what would you do instead? So, I mean, so building a plane or flying it, you can't stop teaching kids in the process of what you're trying to restructure education. Kids have to go to school. They have to be taught. Things have to happen.
Absolutely.
So you are going to be flying a plane while you're building on some levels. So how would you do it differently?
Well, I mean, we know full well that over the last 10, 12, 13 years, there's no child left behind. The test-based, outcomes-obsessed accountability does not work. Now, you look at Washington, D.C., for example. Since 2007, since Michelle Rhee was in and out of office, she was ridden out of town on a rail, that school system is, by every metric, worse than it was before that. Absolutely worse.
But so, what I'm asking, though, is what's the alternative? Not what's why this doesn't work. I want to know from your perspective what does work.
What does work? Well, I look to the affluent schools. I look to elite private schools that don't do very strict test-driven accountabilities that don't follow no-excuses models. They have fully integrated curriculum, fully resourced arts, music, and physical education programs. That's what I look to. I look to teachers who have complete autonomy with what they're doing. I look at other countries that their standards, their manuals are written not as checklists, but they're written as complex narratives that teachers are allowed to build curriculum from the ground up themselves and have the autonomy over their assessment, not this external accountability that we're dealing with now.
So I'm going to go to the phones here, but I think that one of the things that Sean just raised, I think, is a legitimate conversation to have. A lot of things we haven't raised are, Sean, but I'm just taking this one piece out because we've raised on this show before over the last 20 years, which is that why not look at what private schools do? Baltimore City, they say, we have a private education system in this metropolitan area that is one of the largest in the country in terms of people of means having a choice. Public school kids are primarily these days, in most places, working class and poor kids throughout the state, but especially in Baltimore City and parts of Baltimore County. They don't have the choice. So, I mean, what about that idea? If we're looking at where schools are successful, private schools are successful. They don't worry about the testing. They don't have tests. I even asked Governor Martin O'Malley in the last time I interviewed him. I said, Governor, when you went to Catholic schools all the way through, right? Did you love your experience? Yes. Did you learn a lot? Yes, Governor O'Malley says. I said, did you have standardized testing? No.
Okay. One thing before you go to the calls I want to say is that first, when we say that there's no standardized testing in private schools,
right,
I think that we are in a delusionary state because, number one, private schools do have testing. They're not obsessed. It may not be as public, but I think we're being naive if we really believe that children walk into some of the private schools that are in my neighborhood and never take a test until they sit down for the SAT.
I'm not saying that.
Okay. So I do think
that. It's the stakes that are different. High-stakes tests, not in private
school. Well, given that as a parent who now has children in public school but has previously had them in private school, I will tell you that when those scores come out, around college entrance time, and SATs are down, and there are after-school IC exam camps, and there are SAT camps
SATs
that people
SATs are different
thousand.
Than what we're taking at grade
level.
It's aptitude tests versus...
And again, on an early childhood note, I completely agree with you. It's one of the reasons why we are reconsidering in Baltimore City. We are in discussions with our board about revamping our standardized testing protocol. We're reviewing that now. And we know, particularly in early grades, that that is not something that we should be pushing. And frankly, I don't endorse heavy testing for younger kids. But I also think it's a bit naive of us to sit here and act as if all of the private school, all of the private testing companies where kids are flocking to prep for the IC exam is not a high-stakes exam. I think it's a bit naive for us to act as if these kids are just going in and having art classes every day.
Well, they're not going to close. The private school and fire the teachers as a result of those.
No, but there is pressure from the board if kids are not placing where they need to place, and I think that we should have that discussion as a separate discussion. One of the things I do want to say is that we are learning from some of our independent school colleagues. We are reviewing some of their curriculum to say what are the standards, where are we in terms of our expectation for students. So in Baltimore City, one of the things that we're continually asking for things as simple as the books that we're teaching are our levels of expectations equal, right, to other schools, other school districts? Because for us, when you teach high concentrations of students in poverty, No Child Left Behind or not, even pre-No Child Left Behind, we have issues with differing expectations. So frankly, we are going to our colleagues, we are learning from them, and we're benchmarking. But it's a standards issue, and it's an equity issue when you're talking in an urban school district.
Sean, just hold on a second. Let me just go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Brian, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Brian.
And, Mark, thank you for always bringing the substantive issues and the individuals who can intelligently discuss them. I want to talk about something that Dr. Jackson said, a very ominous trend that you may want to comment more about, the privatization issue. And some say that the manifesto for that was the report from the Council of Foreign Relations headed by Condoleezza Rice, Joe Klein, talking about K-12 education is a homeland, a national security issue. And throughout that report, They were talking about leaning toward privatization, and some say the Common Core, this whole Common Core debate, is the infrastructure to move toward privatization. Because it's scary when you hear the professionals keep talking about reviewing, revamping, rewriting, reinvigorating, when it's a plethora of data on how to teach our kids. So while we keep building the plane that we fly, reviewing, revamping, rewriting, when we know how to teach our children. I came up in Baltimore City Public Schools in the 50s and 60s. We weren't testing. It was diligent, rigorous, phonics, reading, writing, oral presentations, and I think I'm the better for it. And also my last comment is, we talked about, I heard the young lady talk about teachers. Why are we placing Teach for America teachers of a proliferation of them in Title I schools that need the most seasoned, competent, and professional teachers as we look to roll out or deploy this Common Core? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Brian.
Fantastic.
I think one of the...
Carl?
Thank you, Mark. One of the issues that I keep, or one of the comments I keep hearing from everyone, even the callers, is the quality of the teacher, the ability of the teacher to deliver the content and help each individual student in their classroom grow. And with that, Betty said something a few minutes earlier, which is the number one concern that superintendents have, is are the resources available for teachers to become knowledgeable of the curricula, which is aligned with the Common Core standards, the pedagogy, the strategies that go with it, and are they going to have the ongoing support? Because the more competent a teacher is, the more autonomy the teacher has because they're comfortable with what they're doing and they can incorporate the other learning issues that arise in that class, his or her classroom, with it. So one of the things we've lost sight of, we believe, superintendents I'm speaking to, and I know others agree, is that we need to make sure that we put the resources where in the hands of teachers so that they can, to the best of their ability, incorporate this new curricula, and address the individual learning needs of each student. And if I could just go one step further, that's how we deal with the gaps between poverty, between speakers of English languages and so forth, is individual by individual. And the only way to do that is to ensure that each teacher has the capacity to do that. So one of the things that superintendents are looking for as we move forward in this transition is, are we going to have the fiscal resources available to properly train and then in an ongoing fashion support our teachers, our principals, our paraprofessionals, anyone that deals with the instruction of young people to ensure that their learning needs are being met? We've built an airplane in flight forever because every year, every day, we're constantly reviewing what we're doing to ensure that we're being successful. So I don't have a problem with that analogy, because the issue is we need to do a better job tomorrow than we are today, and that's by training the teachers.
Well, the caller raised a great question, though. Why would inner-city school systems be bringing in these temporary, alternatively prepared recruits? When I worked in teacher education, I had student teachers that had about 1,500 hours in a classroom before their first day of work. Now, you look at a city like Chicago, where they just fired roughly 2,000 school employees, yet Teacher America is recruiting 200-300 new teachers to replace the veterans that they fired. So if we need well-trained, high-quality teachers in the classroom to prepare for this dubiously innovative Common Core, then why would we allow temporarily trained newbies into the classroom to deal with these most complicated issues?
I mean, I think that's a legitimate question people have had on about Teach for America, Dr. Santelis says, for a long, long time. And these are mostly young white kids coming in. They're there for 2-3 years, and they're gone. And anybody who's taught, I've taught, that knows that if you teach, that it takes a good 5 years for you to really understand what a classroom's about and how to teach. And you learn from the Betty Wellers, who have been in the system for a long time, how you go about doing stuff. That's how you do it as a new teacher. So is there an issue here?
Well, I think one of the things that we are really emphasizing in Baltimore City is, one, frankly, evaluating our pipelines. And that's all of our pipelines, whether it's Teach for America, whether it's the local universities, and saying who are the people who are having the greatest impact with our young people, who are the people who are staying and making a difference. And frankly, we have begun conversations with all of our teacher pipelines, whether they're traditional or non-traditional, and saying we're heightening our level of scrutiny because we believe that our young people deserve the best teachers possible. And, you know, to be frank, the real goal is high quality teachers and high quality classrooms. And frankly, regardless of the pipeline, if we can get those people and have them continually, then we will continue to partner with them. And so it's a level of accountability that we are bringing to the table. Previously, a number of poorer urban districts and rural districts suffer from not being in the driver's seat. And I think one of the things that we're saying now is we're actually looking at the results, and we're looking at how you do with our young people.
No, I know this is – I'm going to go to the – read this email and then go right back to the phones here. And Alan, your next caller, I'm going to get to Amy as well, who has a comment. But we should probably do a conversation about schools, especially in urban and certain rural areas, because I don't think America has ever been in a situation where we've taught children who live in the most abject poverty – sometimes in the history of this country. We have not figured out what an education system should be to deal with kids who have the neurological, psychological damage of intense urban poverty. And I think that's part of the issue that we're not really addressing here. And we expect everything to be on an even playing field. And if your father is a father and parent, if your parents are physicians and professors, and you live in the middle of Potomac, Maryland, it's not the same thing as if your mother is working 3 jobs and your father's working 2 jobs trying to keep a little bit of money in the house, and you're living in a poor neighborhood in an urban area. It's not the same.
Well,
all things are not equal.
What you have here is you've got education reform on the cheap, that we've got a lot of folks that aren't willing to put the adequate investment into the school system. So the idea is to discipline, to punish, to scrutinize, and to supervise. And so what we don't have is the investment in high poverty, high needs environments. You know, all this talk about standards and online testing, that's the cheap way out of the whole thing. I know it's expensive, but when you have schools that are dramatically under-resourced, that schools in major cities closing, 54 in Chicago alone, that's just one city. Philadelphia, dramatic budget cuts in the state of Pennsylvania public education. Then we're going to actually dither about standards and testing and the technological infrastructure that's required to implement this?
I wasn't really going to go there now, but so if anyone else will respond, I'm going to get to the phones. Thoughts? 410-319-8888. Thank you. Alan, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm going to try and keep it brief. I'm very upset about the idea that outside gym classes and exercises and recesses are being cut. Back in the good old days, children went from can't see in the morning till can't see in the evening and developed rickets, which is a bone disease which comes from lack of vitamin D. And now you're going to keep them inside all day with all that youthful energy bottled up. And, this, you know, I'm worried about rickets, too. I'm also worried about cutting of arts and sciences. School is a place where children go not to learn how to take tests, but for critical thinking. Arts and sciences and music develop critical thinking so that, in fact, they can take better tests so they can be better students. And in China, during the Cultural Revolution, they outlawed tests. They had what they called open book tests. We don't need students to memorize stuff, but we need to have students that develop critical thinking, that can know where the resources are, that can go to these resources, and that they can look them up. We don't need tests. We need more reporting. We need to encourage students to do more reporting, more out of school reading and investigating, and things like that, instead of learning how to take tests. Because in real life, you don't take a test when a problem comes upon you. You need to go to look for the answers. And with the internet and with a number of other things, it should be easier for students to learn how to read, to analyze, and to come to the conclusions they need. And this, I'm not a conspiracy theory today, but I remember listening to Rush Limbaugh, and one of the things he wanted to cut was the Department of Education.
All right.
And I would recommend one last thing. There's a movie on YouTube called Breaking with Old Ideas. It's now banned in China.
Okay, thank you, Alan. It's banned in China, and at least the Cultural Revolution did one good thing. Maybe it was banned testing, but that, on that I'm not so sure. But what he was saying, though, I think is real in terms of. We've talked about this for a minute, about recreation, kids getting outside. They're not. I mean, are there plans like in our city schools or other county schools that you worked in very well to bring that back, to bring back an hour's worth of lunch, to bring back time for kids to take an hour's class in gym three times a week, to kind of pull that back into our world for our children? It's not a minor issue. I mean, it's a huge issue.
It's not a minor issue, and there are enough people concerned about losing the arts or losing phys ed. I think people are looking at that because we want our students to come out of school not only learning how to think critically and problem solve, but being healthy, being happy, having some well-rounded education that will allow them to flourish when they become citizens in the world. I think education is one of the most complex jobs there is, and there's so many things impacting it. Look at a high-performing country like Finland. You'll see that they place an emphasis on teachers. They don't even let somebody in a classroom until they have a master's degree. They make it a respected profession. They really admire their teachers, and their kids respond. We talked a moment ago about expectations. I like to tell parents that one of the things they can do in their own home is to set high expectations for their own children, because that's free. It's something they can do every day with their child. Simply say, I want you to have a better future. I want you to go to school. I want you to do better than I did. I want you to learn. And support their kids when they come to school. You're right. It's not a level playing field. You have kids coming to school from all different backgrounds, from all different circumstances, and we're expected to do the same thing for all of them. And I'm here to tell you that teachers have been working very, very hard in public schools to try to make the transition, to try to meet the goals for their kids, to try to do what they need to do to bring all children along. We're still not there, and we know that, so we will continue to work.
I think we realize that the comprehensive, well-rounded education is the key for our young people, especially the physical aspects that the caller talked about. And I think one of the comments that Sean made earlier is we haven't invested to the degree that we need to make sure that we provide those, all of our students those varied experiences. Even the brain research is saying that physical exercise is a critical part of learning, okay, for adults and for children, and with it. I think we're trying to figure out how do we do that in a 6.5-hour day when we're really talking about expanding the day, and that's where the next change will be. And if you go to other countries, you'll see that their day is much longer than the American
much longer.
Day.
And
we need to move that direction.
So, I mean, you look, some of our better schools also have longer days.
Correct.
Private schools have longer days. Kids get there at 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning. They're there at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, studying and playing sports and doing arts in the afternoons. I mean, so that's
But there's not a lot of research evidence that supports one-to-one ratio between a longer school day and academic achievement.
Well, there is enough. And I think there is enough of that to say that's especially in the idea of our urban schools, have a wraparound schools where kids have a safe environment to learn and play and be in a zone that is intellectually stimulating. I think it's kind of critical for us to kind of wrestle with. And I want to ask, before we go to Amy very quickly, what does it mean when we talk about core curriculum? And we say, you used the words earlier, Carl, and you used words earlier to me when we were sitting outside in the hallway, Betty, that core is fewer concepts, deeper learning. What does that mean?
What does that mean?
So what I would say is, if you look at, for example, and I gave this example at a at a board meeting 2 weeks ago, within the Common Core, if you look at, for example, within literature or within the literacy standards, there's a real focus on text-based responses, right? So how are, and any of us who've been to college or post-secondary study know that you can't just make a claim. I mean, even here on this show, right, we're all responsible enough and we're citing research, we're citing data. One of the things that helps to streamline that is instead of having a list of kind of the 50 types of literature that a student must read, right, I as a teacher know that part of what I need to be focusing on, whether I'm using literature or whether I'm using nonfiction, is the ability of my students to be able to substantiate what they're saying with the actual text. Now, yes, we want to know how you feel. Do you like the story? That's still important. But this idea that we all know that the commodity of exchange within post-secondary study, right, is the ability to be able to substantiate. And so instead of a teacher having a checklist of did I teach 15 different types of poetry, and did I teach these, 13 specific novels? This idea that I'm looking, I need to be increasing students' ability to be able to, and that's just one element, but it's a major element that helps, and as a former middle school humanities teacher, helps me be able to ground my work in a major shift or a major concept. So when we say deeper, one of the things that we hear from teachers continually is, I didn't get a chance to hit the critical thinking, the inference skills, because I was rushing to the next topic. And one of the things that we see with the Common Core is that it's allowing teachers to take one topic and hit some of those main competencies that we want young people to have instead of being so concerned about the coverage.
I'm a little confused as far as how that's any different than what I was doing 10 years ago in the classroom.
It might not have been different for you.
Okay,
But it is different.
But a lot of other folks that
I've... For large numbers of teachers that I've talked to in Baltimore City are relieved that right now they can go back to actually teaching students how to write instead of covering 15 different topics.
Right, which is what they would have wanted to do prior to No Child Left Behind. But No Child Left Behind narrowed curriculum to such an extent that teachers were only teaching what was taught. And now all of a sudden the Common Core gives teachers permission to do the good teaching that they would have wanted to do prior to accountability movements?
For a lot of teachers, a lot of teachers that I've talked to have said that yes, and that it validates that, and that it actually stretches them, mm-hmm. particularly in urban school settings where even pre-No Child Left Behind, mm-hmm. we did not have a lot of curriculum that actually thought that poor children should be making those inference skills. We thought that that was, as a society, something that private school children did, but not that poor children did. And so what the Common Core does
when private schools
us.
Embrace Common Core, then maybe I'll get around it as well.
Let me get a final caller in here before we end the hour. 410-319-8888. Amy, last thought.
Mark, thank you for taking my call. I'm one of the parent founders of a new charter school that's opening up this fall called Creative City Public Charter School.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I'm just calling to say that the reason that the parents came together was a direct response the fact that recess and arts have been eliminated from elementary education. So because there's a lot of empirical evidence that shows that we need play and we need art in order to be successful in learning. So with our curriculum, play and art are core elements to our curriculum. All of our classes will have recess every day. Our kindergarten will have two recesses. And the arts are being woven into all the subject matter because we know that it helps children keep what they learn longer in their heads. It makes it personal to them. It connects them to what they're learning. That's all I wanted to add.
Amy, thank you so much. And that's a school we want to follow and see what they do. I know the school is also located in Park Heights, Lower Park Heights. And so I'm very curious to see where the school goes and what they do. And we'll have to come back on the whole segment on charter schools. We'll do that another day. We have plenty to talk about in education. We can do an education show week and not lose interest in topics. I think are we just out of time on this? We do. So the whole charter school thing is another issue we didn't get into, but one of the things I think that we don't explore in charter schools, at least for the city of Baltimore, since it's the leader in charter schools in the state, has to do with who can go to them.
Great. I look forward to that show.
You know, I mean, one of the issues is some of the schools that I love the most in the city, you know, like the Montessori school, let's say, that exists in Baltimore City. You talk to people in the neighborhood, they're going, well, then if this incredible school is right in the middle of my neighborhood, my kids can't go here? I think that's an issue.
Yeah, it is, and it's one of the things we're working with the school on. We're working with the school and their board on that. The school's been very thoughtful. And I, again, won't get into particulars about it, but this
right.
school's been very thoughtful. We're working with them on that. And, you know, again, if you want to have a show on charter schools, I look forward to it. But we believe in Baltimore City that charter schools add to the fabric and the richness of the diversity of experiences that we can provide the community. And just as the caller said, there should be a variety of experiences, but there should also be commonalities. It shouldn't be that you have to go to a charter school to get art and music.
We'll fold that into the Henderson School issue and other issues at another day.
Well, that's going to be a great show.
I want to thank all four of you for being here. It's been a fascinating discussion. You all really all contributed very different and interesting ideas. That was Dr. Sonia Brooking Santelices, who is CAO for the Baltimore City Schools, Betty Weller, who's president of the Maryland State Education Association. Always welcome you in the studio. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you.
Carl Roberts, who is executive director of the Public School Superintendents Association of Maryland. Good to have you back in the studio once again. Dr. Sean Johnson, educator, former public school teacher, co-host of Chalkface, and co-organizer of Occupy the Department of Ed. Good to have you here, Shawnee.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a very brief break. You can join us. Keep joining us. Soundbites is next. We're going to talk about, open the show with the most amazing story about fish. Fish, we're depleting all the fish in the world. Some people are arguing that the next fishery industry should be not in the water outside, but in our warehouses, rebuilding a different industry, put people to work, and making food for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
Yes, have you ever been mistreated? Then you got to.